ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What's the drink that you will never touch again?
It's not never touch again, but I really steer clear of gin.
Why is that?
Well, it goes back to a New Year's Eve in Glasgow many years ago, which I won't recount because it would do my reputation as a health guru. Not that I'm a health guru. All untold damage. But I just don't feel great after having gin and tonic.
Okay.
What about you?
I'm desperate to know more about that now. I haven't had any gin experiences in Glasgow, so I think I'm fine.
Oh, good. That's great. But that's partly what we're going to talk about on this week's What's That Rash?
Kind of. It's not straightforward, which is probably what makes my favourite topics for us to talk about on this show. Let's get into it.
So the question comes from Fiona.
And Fiona says, what is the latest thinking about drinking one glass of red wine a day? Is it good for the gut bacteria? Or if you don't drink anything at all, alcohol-wise, I think she's saying, would that be much healthier? I kind of feel like Fiona's answered her own question.
Yeah, she's got the little wormhole here to the truth, I suspect.
Good on you, Fiona. Well, it kind of comes back to, there was definitely a really, really big movement probably a decade or two ago now about red wine as being health promoting. And it kind of had to do with this idea called the French paradox, which is where they looked at the food habits and death rates of French folks and found out that they had relatively low incidence of coronary heart disease, but even though they had all of the delicious French things like cheese and processed meats and bread and wine, French people were somehow chic and thin and
smoked gitan.
And smoked and somehow were still, you know, avoided death, which seemed like the ultimate chic lifestyle.
Yeah, look, the French paradox is probably better called the Mediterranean paradox because there's lots of different things about the French compared to us. They don't quite smoke at the same rates that they used to. So opening up a packet of gitan and looking cool in the bar after you've had your little aperitif is not cool anymore in France. And so France is quite similar to us in some ways. But there was still this notion of a lot of saturated fat, unhealthy lifestyle, and yet they were doing well. Could it be the red wine?
I think it's actually the berets having a protective effect.
I think they died out long before it became cool.
Well, the thing with this French paradox is it's one of those things which spawned a generation of smug red wine drinkers and was probably a bit of a stretch.
Well, it was a get out of jail for people who wanted something to live younger, longer and do well. But the reality was, compared to Australia, it wasn't much of a paradox. We live pretty much the same sort of length of time as the French. Maybe sometimes the French don't live as long as us. So we could call it the Australian paradox as well. So the statistics didn't quite bear that out. That's the first thing to say about it. And then there's this notion that it's red wine. And in association with this, it was round about the same time that people thought, and you've covered this before, Tegan, there was either what they call a J-shaped curve or a U-shaped curve in alcohol consumption.
And so what that is if we're thinking about our graph and the Y-axis, the one that sticks up and down, is
heart disease, deaths, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And then the X-axis is drinks per day. And there was this idea that perhaps the lowest level of disease and death happened not at zero, but at sort of one or two.
And it goes along with the red wine story, which is that, you know, a couple of glasses of red wine, the theory was it protects against coronary heart disease. And there were a few trials that suggested that based on this U-shaped curve. And it's not a U-shaped curve. It's what we spoke about previously, which is reverse causation. So, Dr. Taylor, you now to get your top prize in epidemiology. Tell us what reverse causation is.
Well, they call it the sick quitter effect as well. And it's basically when someone's already unwell. And so that's the reason why they're not participating in whatever the behavior is. And in this case, we're talking about alcohol. Often it's people who don't drink any alcohol because they are unwell and have sort of long-term health diseases, or because they used to be perhaps heavy drinkers and don't anymore. And that lasting damage has endured.
And the result of that is that the people on the left-hand side of the graph, where it's ticking up again with no alcohol consumption, that was not in fact the case that it ticked up because of alcohol, no alcohol. It ticked up because that was a sicker group of people. And in fact, it's a straight line, and it's a straight line with red wine or any alcohol. And associated with this, there was also research at the time looking where they still believed, they hadn't got rid of this U-shaped curve, but they believed is there something special about different kinds of alcohol? So is something special about red wine?
Why red wine specifically? Because, yeah, like you say, this kind of applied to any alcohol consumption. So what made red wine special?
Well, it was theoretical, is that in red wine there are polyphenols, natural antioxidants, and there's also this so-called anti-aging compound that's been researched called resveratrol. Most of the research in resveratrol has occurred in rodents rather than human beings. And whilst one day they might find a form that reliably is absorbed and utilised well, the jury is still out.
Well, you can buy it as a supplement. Like when I was trying to do some research ahead of this chat, I had to sort of wade through lots and lots of ads for supplements of resveratrol before I could get to any of the peer-reviewed articles about it.
Yes, it's a fraught area, and red wine is not necessarily the answer. Now, gut microbiome, Fiona asked about that, and it's true that the phenols, the antioxidants and so on, the substances, polyphenols in red wine do change the microbiome to a more healthy profile. But it's maybe one glass a week, certainly not one glass a day. And paradoxically, talking about paradoxes, it occurs with white wine as well.
Okay, because that was the other thing. I was like, why is red wine getting all of the PR here and poor little Cardinet is getting nothing?
Yeah, so there is some crossover here between red wine and white wine. And the properties associated with red wine may not be exclusively associated with red wine. Maybe they're with white wine or even other forms of alcohol.
So what, remind me, because I always forget, antioxidants do what?
We do a deal with the devil to live. We've got to breathe in oxygen.
It is crucial.
Yes, it is pretty crucial. But oxygen also causes us to age, because you get oxygen when it's split, O2, the two atoms of oxygen, it's split up. This is a gross simplification. It rusts the body from the inside. It's called oxidation. And it's just like rust on iron. You rust from the inside out. Now, oxidation is an inevitable process of breathing in oxygen, but it can go faster or slower. And it ages tissues and ages cells. And polyphenols, antioxidants, reduce these what are called reactive oxygen species in the body and therefore slow down the aging process. That's the theory. It doesn't work with vitamins, antioxidant vitamins, but you know, there is experimental evidence that in a Mediterranean diet, for example, it's one of the key things in a Mediterranean diet that is good for us.
So red wine has antioxidants in it, but so do lots of foods, like you say, that are in the Mediterranean diet, nuts, green leafy vegetables, all sorts of fruit. Like, why are we relying on wine for this?
Well, we shouldn't rely on wine because wine has got something else in it too. Do you want to guess what that might be, Jean?
Headaches.
That's right, alcohol and headaches. That's true. Don't talk to me about red wine headaches. So, yes, and alcohol has its own effects on the body in terms of cancer causation, in terms of liver damage. So the alcohol has its own effects. Now, with the red wine, there's a little bit of evidence of benefit from red wine. But in fact, it's like one glass a week affecting the slowing down of the aging process. It's not one a day. And the cardiac effects are pretty minimal. And there's also something else going on here, which is kind of, in terms of the epidemiology of moderate amounts of alcohol and red wine, is that red wine drinkers, so it's not only that people who don't drink at all are unhealthier, it's people who drink moderately and drink red wine have been shown to be healthier than average.
Yeah, because they're rich tossers who can afford it. The sort of people who are drinking red wine are not always the sort of people who are drinking beer.
That's right. What a lovely Pinot this is. I wonder which side of the hill it came from. Yes, exactly.
Taste the terroir.
Exactly. And so it's the lifestyle of the people who drink red wine rather than beer and so on.
Because as a general rule, people who are better off are probably more likely to be healthier. They certainly seem to die later than people who are poorer, and maybe they have better access to other things like the fresh fruit and vegetables, and maybe access to healthcare, and maybe access to opportunities to be safely physically active.
Of course, we've also made, or I have made, a sweeping generalization here, because in the Australian context, because of the bizarre way we tax alcohol, and we don't tax alcohol by volume, we actually have cask wine, which in some communities in Australia is cheaper than buying water. And so cask wine can be a very cheap way of consuming high amounts of alcohol, particularly in Aboriginal communities. So it's not entirely true that people who drink red wine are rich wankers. It's also a feature of poverty as well.
Okay, so there's definitely complicating factors there, but at a global scale, maybe there's a bit of an effect in the data that red wine drinkers are maybe better off than people who drink other types of alcohol. So socioeconomic factor at play here. The role of the media in communicating this to the public, I don't feel like it has done as good of a job as we could. Because what you end up having happen is that there'll be a study that's looked at, say, resveratrol or polyphenols. And in an attempt to make that tantalizing to the public or to make it accessible to a general audience, the headline will say something like red wine compound found to, you know, reverse aging or something. People don't read the story. They just read the headline. They go out and load up on wine. And it's not necessarily science's fault that people are misinformed about this.
No, and we report on single studies rather than bringing the evidence together, which is what we try to do on What's That Rash. And then there's the other element to this research, which suggests that there is actually an influence of food, that if you drink red wine by itself, if it's going to have any effect, it may well actually have more of an effect when you have the food. But then the question is it the food rather than the wine? You can see where we're going with this.
It's where we're going with it is it's really, really complicated. So I guess for someone like Fiona, who is wanting to optimize their health, is taking one glass of wine a week the answer? I'm thinking it's probably not.
You've got to think about the alcohol more than the red wine. And so there's a straight line with alcohol. The more you drink, the more risk you take.
From zero.
From zero. And it's your liver, it's weight gain. It's cardiotoxic at a certain level. It's toxic to your heart and blood vessels, not protective. The more you drink, the more harm you're doing yourself. There is some benefit to alcohol, which is about social contact, socialization, and so on, which is not to be cast aside. But you shouldn't be deluding yourself that you're doing yourself a lot of physical good. You're not.
And so if you are just so hungry for resveratrol, you can get it in nuts, grapes, berries, and you can get all sorts of polyphenols from apples, almonds, soybeans, spinach, just all of the usual suspects, really.
Yeah, and buy a really expensive Pinot, darling, and then you will only take it in very small amounts.
Because you can't afford to do otherwise. Fiona, thank you so much for sending in that question. If you have a question for us, you can email it to us, thatrash@abc.net.au. We love answering your questions. And we answered Daniel's question just the other day, Norman, and he's emailed us back to say, so he asked us whether you do need to drink 2 litres of water a day. He says, thank you from New York. And he's been listening since the early coronacast days. And he says that his water intake was getting to be a chore. So thanks for letting him off the hook.
Always welcome, Daniel.
And Jeremy was also listening to that episode on how much water you should drink. And he said it got him thinking, drinking chlorinated tap water, does the chlorine kill your gut bacteria?
What a good question. So Shelby Traynor, our producer, has delved deeply. She's been working, slaving at Jeremy's question for hours and hours and hours. And she's found a Nature study. So Nature is like one of the world's two best science journals from 2022, which found no substantial impact on, it's a good question though, on your gut microbiome from drinking chlorinated water. And of course, highly filtered water may risk reducing your fluoride intake, which might rot your teeth. So, you know, chlorinated water is not a bad idea. Just tap water, pretty safe, ubiquitous. The world has not come to an end by having safe water on tap.
So if you have a love letter that you want to write us or a question or a comment, we are thatrash@abc.net.au, or you can send us a DM on Instagram. We are at ABC Health.
And we just love anything French, so keep it coming in.
Oui, oui.
How appropriate, Tegan, given we've just been talking about water. Or you could say, as they say in the south of France, oui.